Welcome to the Anthro to UX podcast, where you will learn how to break into UX with an anthropology degree. Through conversations with leading anthropologists working in user experience, you will learn firsthand how others made the transition, what they learned along the way, and what they would do differently. We will be discussing what it means to do UX research from a practical perspective and what you need to do to prepare a resume and portfolio. I'm your host, Matt Arts, a business anthropologist specializing in design anthropology and working at the intersection of product management, user experience, and business strategy. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Anthro to UX podcast. I'm Matt Arts. I'm here today with Jesse Dart, senior UX researcher at Hyatt Hotels and the author of Feeding the Hustle. So, Jesse, thanks for coming on. Would you mind by telling everyone how you got involved in anthropology?
Yeah, anthropology for me really stemmed out of my love of travel and going places and exploring other countries. When I was 13, I was an exchange student through 4-H, and anybody listening in America might be familiar with that. If you come from a rural area or the Midwest, 4-H was like a big part of my life, and they had an exchange with Japan that I think still exists, actually. So my first overseas trip was when I was 13 to Japan for a month in the summer to hang out with some people there. And then the following summer, the host brother of that family came to stay with us in Illinois, where I grew up. So that kind of like put me on this like path of just being interested in other people and other countries. And then from there, when I was doing my undergrad, I got the chance to study abroad for a whole semester in Mozambique. And that was really, I think, where anthropology kind of started to click and fall into place. For me, then after that, it was just the thing that I liked and I continue to like about anthropology is it's kind of a catch-all for people like me who have a lot of different interests, right? Because we tend to sort of beg, borrow, and steal from sociology or from economics or from history or from, you know, political science or filmmaking or photography and like all these sort of areas of exploration that I feel like are like just part of my natural interests. So anthropology really, yeah, I just found it late. I couldn't major in anthropology as an undergrad, but then I went off and did all my grad work overseas. So I started in Australia doing a master's in applied anthropology down at Macquarie University, and then took a break and ended up then doing a master's in Italy in gastronomy and food, not cooking, but just kind of learning about the whole aspect of tasting and production and communication and sort of all that side of high quality food stuff. And then went back to Australia to do my PhD at the University of Sydney in anthropology. And I tied those things together. So I've had a longstanding interest in just sort of, I guess what I call organizational anthropology, which is kind of anthropology of office spaces and workers and work life and sort of, I'm like hesitant to call it labor dynamics because I don't really get into that sort of thing, but more about like what happens in office spaces and how has that changed over the past, you know, sort of period of time. So I was able to turn that interest of food and eating and sort of conviviality into a PhD project, which looked at that inside tech companies, which started to give people free meals and, you know, encourage them to stay in the office longer. Yeah, that's a little bit about where things started for me. We can talk more about some of those in a minute.
Yeah, it's interesting how you brought the food together with, you know, organizational anthropology within tech. So tell me, though, first, before we get there, any reflections on now, anthropology education in Australia, appreciating that, you know, you don't have the, I guess, the experience here to compare it to, but, you know, here it's not very applied in most programs. Yeah. So what was your experience like there?
I mean, I think the applied master's was great because it was really, you know, taking a lot of these tools and ideas and theories and just kind of learning how to apply them to everyday situations. And that could be like, I had a friend there in the same program and he was studying farmers markets in Sydney and trying to understand, you know, sort of consumer behavior at farmers markets. And then he ended up doing a project for one of the councils there, trying to help them, you know, encourage more people to come, things like that, which I felt like were really, I don't know, just kind of far away from the traditional like field work, going, you know, to some so-called exotic place in the world for a long period of time, and then coming back and writing articles that I think, as most of us academics will admit, not a lot of people read, really. So I didn't want to sort of pigeonhole myself into that type of situation. But I think the applied aspect in Australia is and was really strong, at least in that master's program. And Macquarie, I think, has a real push towards that. And I would say, though, like, what one of the other things that took me to Australia in that program in particular was that it was just a pure master's program. I didn't have to enroll in a PhD program and then do a master's along the way, right? Because I didn't know if I wanted to do a PhD. I didn't know how far I wanted to go in my academic world or academic life. So for me, that was one reason why going abroad was great, because there were just so few options to do that in the United States, to just do a pure, you know, MA in social anthropology. There's a few programs around now, but I still think that that's kind of few and far between. So I feel like that's a missed opportunity with anthropology in the United States, is we're pushing, you know, people towards enrolling in PhD programs with the MA along the way. But a lot of people just, you know, they want a master's degree and that's enough for them. So I would say Australia has a long history of anthropology. Sydney Uni is the oldest anthro program in the country, and just really grounded in sort of the opposite of what I was talking about, grounded in the traditional long-term field work. I can't think of the word is escaping me at the moment. Doing long-term ethnography in the same location for a long period of time. My supervisor, Holly High, was doing that. She still goes to the same country in Laos. She goes to Laos still. And so I feel like I've kind of got these two different perspectives now. You know, I have this sort of more traditional long-term field work, build your sort of expertise around this one community of people, and then this other idea of taking applied stuff and trying to turn that into, you know, to be sort of funny about it, business solutions, or, you know, like creative ways to like help solve problems for companies.
Great. And so I'd love to hear more about, you know, your work on, you know, on food provided in organizations. So what did that look like?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think, you know, the hardest part was just getting access. Access to these companies and access to being there and doing the field work. I spent a long time building connections, building sort of a network of people, writing cold emails, cold calling places, you know, using LinkedIn extensively for this type of thing, to like, who's in charge of this stuff? Who is the gatekeeper? Who can say yes or no? Like, this researcher can come and spend time in our office and ask our like office workers questions, because companies are really cagey about things like that, especially when you tell them you're doing a PhD and talk to people and sit around and stuff like that. And eventually after almost changing my entire thesis topic because of difficulties in getting access, I had two companies that were like, yeah, that's totally cool. And I did have to sign a lot of NDAs to sort of access those spaces. But in the end, I was able to spend time, you know, for about 12 or 14 months in various offices of these two companies in London, San Francisco. I went to Dublin and also in Australia, and see what's happening there with their food programs. Not just talking to chefs and like people making the food, but it was really about how is the food impacting the lives of the employees? Is it, and this is where the whole idea of the book came out of Feeding the Hustle, because what I realized is that, you know, for all the talk of the hustle culture and the amount of time that people, these companies kind of inadvertently want people to spend in the office, that's not really possible unless you feed them. Like, food was really the key to that, I think. I talked to people who would show up and they would go to the gym at work at 7 a.m, then they'd eat breakfast, then they'd do work meetings or whatever. They'd eat lunch at work, they'd do work meetings throughout the afternoon, they'd stay, meet dinner at work, and then go home. And essentially, you know, the workplace is turned into the home for these people. It's not that they're living there, but I think at one point I heard that Facebook was actually going to build apartments for some of their employees that then they could rent from the company. You know, like, the caveat to all of this, though, that I'll say is that all of my research was done before COVID, and it was all done before that, you know, period of time in our lives sort of upended a lot of things, and it upended a lot of this, a lot of these perks and benefits. And it also upended, you know, about how many people are working in office spaces anymore. A lot of people went home and they're still at home. And so I think an update is due, but having the time and energy and money to do that is tough.
Great. Well, thanks for sharing that. And so, you know, obviously through that experience, I take it, you know, you develop some connections. Is that what helped you get into UX, or is that even where you learned about UX?
You know, UX was kind of starting to be talked about in Anthro circles a while ago. Like, I started hearing about it probably in 2017 or 18. And, you know, I had met some other anthropologists. I had started to see people on LinkedIn who had done anthropology and had started moving into UX. But nobody taught me about it. Like, I never took a class. Like, there was never any, you know, lecture on future jobs for anthropology majors include UX study. Nothing like that for me. Those might have been out there, but I didn't find them. For me, I was looking to make some extra money while I was writing my thesis. And I was living in Italy at the time, I found this agency in Rome called Fifth Beat, and I just sort of cold emailed them. I said, "Hey, I'm doing anthropology. I know anthropologists are getting into UX studies. You have some UX researchers. Do you need any help?" And they said, "Actually, we do need some help." And turns out I was the only native English speaker that they had on staff at the time, so that was really convenient for them. But it was really through Fifth Beat and like that really excellent group of people that work there, just sort of taking me under their wing and saying, okay, here's how you do, like, here's UX, like, here's the projects we're working on. Here's the projects that you're going to work on. Like, here's what, here's just sort of the process, and here's where UX is kind of grown out of. Like, Raffaele, who runs Fifth Beat, teaches service design and UX design in Milan. And so he was just a really excellent person to learn from. And so my interest in UX and sort of that this whole career that has kind of grown out of that just started with this ad hoc project by project contract with this company, Fifth Beat. I can't talk highly enough about them. They're just a really great place. And so there I worked on a bunch of different projects, you know, for anything from, you know, cruise lines to World Food Program, and got a lot of exposure to different types of UX projects. And did some UX writing for a couple of other smaller companies in the meantime while I was still finishing my dissertation. And so that's really my intro to UX, was just basically putting myself out there and saying, "Hey, do you need help? I'm interested in learning more about this." You know, I think I started to see some of the writing on the wall about anthropology and, you know, and about how many tenure track positions there were and how difficult it is to get those any longer. And just sort of, I think, decreased funding in social sciences and decreased interest, which usually results in decreased funding, over time. And I'd started to kind of poke around the idea of like continuing, you know, trying to find a postdoc here or there and stuff, but it was just tough. And so, you know, after I graduated, I kept working for Fifth Beat for a while through the pandemic, and just kept learning and kept doing more and more projects.
So now you're back in the States, yep. Like LA, right?
I actually live in Arizona. I came because I actually did end up finding a postdoc. I worked at ASU here for a year before I joined Hyatt. That was a good experience. I'm glad that I had it, but I'm trying to be generous about this. It was a good learning, a good year of learning for me, to put it mildly, I guess. So I'm out here in the desert. Hyatt, I'm the senior UX researcher at Hyatt. I've been there for about 2.5 years now, a little over 2 years. What can I say? Hyatt, during COVID and the pandemic, kind of got rid of a lot of positions. And then after the pandemic ended, although I'm hesitant to say end, like sort of the main part of the pandemic ended, they started rehiring and building out their design team more. So Hyatt found me through LinkedIn. I think I can, it's the only job I've ever gotten through LinkedIn. I still owe a recruiter somewhere a beer or a drink sometimes for finding me. But my boss, Gavin, comes with a background in anthropology. And so he was really keen on finding people with similar backgrounds or, you know, just sort of this perspective that we have on the world. Because something that I've learned now after a couple of years is that hotels are incredibly complicated places. And the business of hoteling is an incredibly complicated business. From the outside, it might seem fairly simple, but looking at it from the inside, it takes an anthropologist's eye, I think, sometimes to understand the nuance that exists within a company like Hyatt.
So appreciating it's, you know, one experience in Italy, one experience here. Is there anything that stands out, you know, and maybe that's just between organization and organization is maybe a better way to look at it, but anything that stands out between the practices that differ?
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, there's two different questions that people are trying to have help, ask me to help them answer. And one of those is, you know, kind of directly related to a business problem, which usually results in money. That is, you know, sometimes it's testing user interface, sometimes it's testing design, sometimes it's, you know, usually related to an end result. There was the, you know, jargon word of conversion or something like that. And then on the other side of that are projects which are more exploratory in nature. They might not have a clear business outcome, but they might be the beginning of something that could eventually, you know, lead into a new business idea or something like that. I feel like I did more of that exploratory kind of work for European clients when I was at Fifth Beat, as compared to someplace like Hyatt, which has a very clear directive, right? Like, we want to make sure our guests are having the best experience at the Canada Hotel. And like, at the end of the day, we want people to keep booking hotel rooms with us. So almost everything we do there is driven with a sort of financial driver. So I think really for me, that's kind of two different realms of business. That's not to say I don't do exploratory work at Hyatt. I've done a lot of that. And that's not to say I didn't do, you know, sort of business driven projects in Europe, but, yeah, that's just kind of something I noticed. And there's no one way that's better than the other. It's just, you know, kind of a different type of,
So now at Hyatt, are you looking at just the digital experience or does it expand beyond that to, you know, more of maybe a service design or a broader experience design kind of perspective?
Yeah. So we're actually a very small team. We have two full-time researchers, myself included, and then one director of research. And then we have a couple of contractors who help out on different projects. So, you know, a team of three full-time employees for a company the size of Hyatt, we can sometimes feel a little bit overstretched. But my area that I primarily work in is on the digital team. A lot of that is with products or things that are related to the in-stay experience. That could be the app. It could be some type of experience or product that a guest or a colleague is dealing with in a property, anything that sort of falls into that realm. My colleague, Michelle, she tends to deal with more enterprise stuff. So anything that sort of, you know, colleague facing on the back end, which we have a lot of, you know, products and software that have been built in-house that need revision or changes and things like that. So we're both pretty busy people as far as, you know, just sort of the amount of output and like the pace that we're going for. But I think what we both tried to do, though, Michelle also has a PhD, so our boss hired two doctors. So we sometimes get into this kind of, you know, geeky academic mode where we want to pull in different pieces of, you know, academic writing or theories and things like that to help explain a situation or, you know, something that we've witnessed or to that nature. And we really pushed, and our boss pushed, you know, for us to be able to do field work. So we had a small budget. We've done some projects where we've been able to go out into properties and hotels and talk to guests and talk to, you know, colleagues and people that are working there to try to get their perspective. And that's been really well received. And that's not something that was ever done before. So in that sense, for me, that's the best because I'm utilizing a lot of those skills that I learned doing my PhD, being in the field, how to do, you know, observation and interviews. And Michelle and I have been able to create sort of an internal list of not classes, but just like we've done a couple of I guess lectures is the right word, with our colleagues who want to do this too. And yeah, we've got support, you know, up to the VP level to try to like encourage designers and things like that to go out to hotels to meet, you know, housekeepers and chefs and anybody who's working in there. Because what we've realized is that all of the things that we talk about at a corporate level, any design change that we make or any, you know, technological feature that we might add or take away, sometimes has an impact on not just the guests, but it has an impact on colleagues on property. And that's been a cool takeaway. That's been a really interesting part of this that, you know, I think when I was interviewing for this job, I kind of initially, I was like, hotels are fascinating places and there's a never ending supply of them to go visit around the world. And, you know, at the moment we are very, at least the research team, we're trying to push for more money to be able to go to Europe or Asia or South America and look at some of these different, you know, issues and like projects and stuff in a more through a different lens, because we're a global company, we have properties all over the world, but sometimes we kind of can get siloed into North America. But it's super interesting. I mean, I think, you know, for anybody like myself, I feel like, you know, there is a food component also to that can come into play, because hotels, most all of them have dining and things like that. And so for me, it kind of ticks a lot of boxes. It's been great. Michelle, my colleague, was just at Epic this past last month out in Los Angeles. I didn't get to go this year. You know, we have sort of this great support through the company of being able to do stuff like that, like go to Epic or, okay, let's bring Malinowski or some sort of crazy, you know, piece of theory into this and kind of deconstruct that and make it digestible for people who might have not, they don't know who he is, they don't know anything about him, but, you know, we're trying to explain something. And yeah, it's great. It's just a really kind company to work for.
Sounds great. How about, you know, I think you're the first person who's been on, who's been, you know, in hospitality. So is there anything interesting to hospitality in UX that, you know, is differs from the other experiences you've had when you were in Italy?
Yeah, that's a good one. I would say like one of the big things is that we have a lot of players, right? Especially with an app, like the app isn't just a tool for a guest. What we found is like, sometimes, you know, we have colleague, like employees on properties that end up being tech support for people with their app because they happen to be there. And it's like, oh, hey, I can't do this. Can you help me do this on my app? And so I think for us, there's always this like, whereas if you're just, you know, doing a project, which is like an app and you have a user, we just have so many groups of people that interact with our technology from different perspectives that we're constantly having to think about how this impacts those people as well. Because, you know, for example, if we take away something like a chatbot, then all of a sudden we're going to have increased call volume at, you know, a call center somewhere, because people aren't going to have this chatbot to interact with. So they're going to find a way to find a solution, things like that. Yeah. Hospitality has other challenges too. You know, where people just, I think in dealing sometimes with metrics and data and stuff, my team, we don't really touch all that. We have a whole different team that deals with metrics and data and tracking and, you know, analytics and numbers and charts and graphs, which is fantastic because as an anthropologist, it's not really my cup of tea. I want to talk to people and I want to, you know, do interviews and take photos and stuff like that. So I think part of the other challenge with hospitality is like, we just have so much data and so much information that's available to us. Sometimes sort of parsing that down and making sense of that is really tough. And then also trying to catch ourselves and not making assumptions just based on numbers, instead of, you know, what I like to do is I'll take the numbers, we'll talk about it, and then I'll try to validate that through sort of an ethnographic method, whether that's having a conversation or doing some interviews or doing some observation at a property. I think hotels are just you know, hotels aren't just a place where people sleep. They're places where people have weddings and they have meetings and they have events, and they go there to eat dinner without staying in a hotel, and they go there to use a pool through something like a resort pass or something like that. And so, you know, we have all of these different aspects of a hotel property that we have to sort of consider, and it's just very multifaceted, and each one of those can be forgotten about or kind of pushed aside. Maybe that's unique to, you know, within the world of UX research, I think. Our products are harder to define sometimes. Like an app is definitely a product, or, you know, a piece of software is definitely a product. But I think sometimes there's, you know, there's just, in the end, we're not a tech company, but we have tech that we have to support and create and build and test. So we kind of straddle these two worlds of, you know, we have physical locations and physical rooms and all of this stuff versus a purely digital company that doesn't have any of that to deal with.
So in there, you mentioned, you know, you like doing some of the field work, taking photos. I do think you also, you know, take photos, and we mentioned at the beginning your book, and so you write. So you want to just maybe tell us a little bit about the other kind of activities you have going on?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, UX is by far not like the only thing I write and think about. I've been a photographer. I think I got my first camera when I was 6, and I've just kind of kept with it since then. But I'm still one of these people that holds on to film. I'm still 35 millimeter primarily. And I've slowly been building a nice archive of images that I've just now started to put into some sort of format. I got an arts grant from the Arizona Arts Council to work on a photo book that I've been putting together for the past few months, and with a book designer, and just trying to like get some of that out there. You know, cause it's kind of like the thing where, you know, if you make music, get it out in front of people. And I have a website, and, you know, I can share those links with you and stuff like that. People can visit with a lot of my photography and stuff on there. But I just wanted to do something different. And then, you know, along the side too, I started, in between doing my second master's and my PhD, I started writing articles and pitching magazines. So I've written, gosh, I don't even know how many now, but contributed to a bunch of places like Monocle and The Guardian, and The Atlantic, and The Art of Eating, and Vice, and a bunch of places like this. So, you know, that's kind of, writing and photography are passion projects that have sometimes brought me money, sometimes not, but I continue to do them. And, you know, I find them very complementary. Like I was saying earlier, I think, you know, one of the other real reasons that anthropology attracted me is because I've always been somebody who took photos. When I went to Africa on that trip, I think I took almost 50 rolls of film, and then had to save money and get them developed like gradually over time when I got back. But, I'd seen, you know, anthropological films and videos and stuff like this. And I knew that photography and, you know, was a big part of that. And I thought, okay, here's this sort of interesting academic area that can kind of catch a lot of things that I'm interested in. And, you know, if I'm taking photos, that can be part of it. Or if I'm doing interviews, that can be part of it. But I also really enjoy writing. And I think for me, a lot of people hate writing their PhD thesis, but I just found it to be to be such a great process. I loved it. I wish I could go back and keep writing. I just kind of found a groove and went with it. But so I'm sort of around, you know, I'm doing some other photo projects and stuff like that. And hopefully this book will get sort of designed and put together in the next several months or so, that sort of thing. Write stories on Substack. I've always been sort of writing tiny little stories and things like that. But that just started as another way to, I don't know, just like get some of this creativity that I have built up out of me. I will say that, like, at some point, you know, there's maybe, if there's any critique or like problem, is that I feel like sometimes some of these jobs sort of, you know, it's up to me to make them creative. It's up to me to make my work at Hyatt creative or, you know, work for clients or whatever I was doing in the past. I think that I'm slowly starting to find, you know, out how to do that within the boundaries of the company and the boundaries of the project and stuff. So that's a learning curve, you know, that's just part of the process. Nobody teaches you that when you're doing your grad program.
Yeah, there's a lot that's not taught in grad school that's needed for work. But
yeah, that's true. It's very true. You know, it's, you know, I wish there was a class on like UX research, but, or, you know, alternative job roles for anthropology majors. But, you know, I think that we're a great community of people, and there's a lot of different places out there I found on the web, you know, where there's advice. And just like your podcast here, you know, I think everybody who's been on here, we all have such different paths to get into getting into UX and stuff. And it's an interesting little world that we've got.
Yeah, it's a good community for sure. And so that, I guess, brings me to the final question. If anybody wanted to get in touch with you to pick your brain and learn a little bit more, what would be a good way to get in touch?
Yeah, my website is a good spot. It's jessedart.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn and Instagram and those places. Usually always at jessedart, jessedart on Instagram and jessedart on LinkedIn. I'll share some links with you. You can probably put them in the show notes. But I'm always interested to talk to people. You know, I've done a couple of sessions with young anthropologists, people graduating, just wanting to pick my brain and hear a little bit about it. If there are any, you know, anybody studying design or research, Hyatt has a really great summer intern program in Chicago that we run every summer. And feel free to get in touch about anything photo related, anthro related, whatever.
Very good. Well, Jesse, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thank you all for listening to the Anthro to UX podcast. To learn everything you need to break into UX, visit anthrotouX.com. There you will find all the podcast episodes and career coaching resources. Please like, share, and subscribe. See you next time.